Welcome back to another episode of Crossing Broadcast. I'm your host, Kyle Pagan. As always, I'll be joined by Kevin Kincaid. We've Beasley Reese coming up here at 12:15. We're getting to the Phillies win the series, pitching those shaky NFC East roundup here. Eagles are banged up, and are the Cowboys the best team in the NFC East? Let's bring on right now Kevin Kincaid. You used to do it yourself, Kev. We don't have a producer today.
No, I got it. Craig's lazy. I know. What is he making? Big $250,000.
Can't even $250,000 an episode, and he can't even show up, or a year, whatever it is. Yeah. Craig is off today. So if the producing's a little shaky, you know why, because it's me and Kevin half doing the show and half trying to bring tweets and videos and all this other stuff up.
I am not Craig's line manager, but if I was, I would have not approved this vacation request. Mm-hmm. Not two weeks into the Eagles season, man. You can't be taking. Oh, wait, you're taking a week off.
I'm taking a week off.
What am I saying? So yeah, no problem. It's all right, we're gonna get through it. Now we're gonna have a good show. I'm happy to be back at work on a Monday because the kids were just a royal pain in the ass this weekend. Wait until you have kids, and then you're like, man, I can't wait for the weekend to be over so I can just drop them off at preschool again and, you know, get back.
Might never be in those shoes. Honestly, might never be in those shoes. You never know. We had two opposite weekends. I'll tell you that. I'm recovering from mine. If you can hear it in my voice and everything, it was a perfect Sunday to be very hungover, laying on the couch. I barely even watched the 1 o'clock games. I caught more of the 4 o'clock games. So I caught basically the entire NFC East, which was nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And everything. And speaking of the NFC East, it should be called the NFC Beast because three teams are 2-0 and one team's 1-1, and they just came back down 28-0 or 21-0, whatever it was, after not scoring even 1 point in the first six quarters of football. It ain't going to be an easy one. There's a reason why no one has repeated as a division champion from 2004. I mean, we haven't talked since I know, obviously, it's been 3-4 days since the Eagles won on Thursday Night Football, but we haven't talked about it due to the new schedule.
Yeah, we didn't break that down yet. No.
And the way I look at it is they're 2-0. They're not even playing their best football. And at the end of the year, they don't ask how. They ask how many wins you can total up. So, I mean, I'm not freaking out too much. I mean, I know people are looking at the passing offense and saying Jalen Hurts doesn't have it this year. You know, maybe Brian Johnson wasn't the guy. But then you look on the other side, and I feel like we were doing this last year. And I feel like this is how we started the Rational Tuesday stuff. And it was mostly talking more about the defense and everything. But you look at it, and they ran for 200 yards on offense. So it's like, okay, maybe the passing game wasn't there, but the running game was there, and the offensive line looks amazing. And yeah, the defense is a little banged up. I did see Reed Blankenship over the weekend. Sources are saying the ribs are feeling good, so we'll get at least one guy back there. Breaking news right there. I'm not worried because we could be talking about 6-0, easily be talking about 6-0. The Buccaneers, I think they win by at least two touchdowns on Monday night. Mm-hmm. And I'm just really not worried. I don't know. Am I wrong? Am I wrong for thinking I shouldn't be worried?
No. I mean, because again, it's almost like, what we've heard this year is kind of a carbon copy of what we heard last year after two games. You know, just when you have justifiably high expectations, you know, people are going to expect the wins, and then the focus on the back end for some people is going to be like, hey, what do we have to do in order to accomplish this? You know, that was always the case last year. It's like, hey, it's good. Nobody's arguing with wins, but you know, if we have these aspirations, then we got to improve this and we got to improve that. But I don't think, you know, Thursday night was like an all 22 game. Because there was just stuff that was going on in the passing game that was impossible to parse in real time. You know, I mean, most of the things are, but you know, I kept watching Minnesota, you know, only send three guys and drop eight in the coverage and play, you know, that kind of, you know, Big 12-ish kind of like, you know, heavy zone coverage or whatever, which led to the moment of frustration on the sidelines with AJ Brown, you know, looking for the ball. And that was kind of the story of the game, right? I mean, Jalen Hurts trying to read what was being given to him, not, you know, them not exactly being, you know, on point with their kind of zone beaters, crossing routes, shallow stuff to, you know, to beat that web of dudes. And, you know, so they made the adjustment right in the second quarter, I guess, to just say, all right, well, if you're going to rush three and you're going to go soft up front, then we're just going to pound the ball, you know, There's nothing wrong with that. I think people just are of the mindset of like, hey, we shouldn't have to adjust to what they're doing. They should have to adjust to what we're doing. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? It's almost like a front foot kind of thing, because I think people I look at that and I just say like, okay, well, they're seeing what the defense is giving them, and they're taking the defense is giving them. I'm just going to run it down their throats. I mean, it was very satisfactory when they went down the field with 13 runs out of 16 plays, you know. But I think the Negadelphia, the glass half empty people look at it and say like, well, we shouldn't have to do that. The only reason we had to do that is because we can't throw the ball. I don't think that's valid.
Everybody yells about running the ball all the time. And now we ran the ball. People should be the happiest people in the world. And now it's the passing game's problem.
I know.
Come on. Love. Yeah. Just be happy one time. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. A win is a win is a win.
But that's why I wrote that story the day after. You know, here's an exercise, right? Because you always like to do an exercise on the program. If I threw this question out there to you and to the chat, I'd be interested in knowing if people last year's Eagles, if they looked at last year's team as a running team or a passing team.
I looked at them. I thought they were great through the air more.
They actually had more rushing yards than passing yards last year. I mean, proportionate to the rest of the league. They were the fifth best rushing team in the league, and they were the eighth best passing team.
Yeah. I just looked at it. I looked at the attempts after you wrote that story last week, and I was shocked to see there were more rushing attempts than there were passing attempts. I don't think there was by many. I think it was like not even double digits.
Yeah.
But it was a very I'm losing my train of thought right now. Had a rough weekend.
You and me both, but for different reasons. By the way, there are too many sports on Saturday night. I was sitting there. I didn't have enough screens. There were not enough screens in this household to fit everything on television that I was trying to watch.
That's true.
You had the backyard brawl. You had the Union were playing. You had the Phillies were playing. You had Colorado playing. You had mixed martial arts. You know, it's like all at the same fucking time. Can't we spread this out a little bit?
I know. That's why I'm like my baseball watching has just like totally fallen off a cliff.
But it should have. It should have after we watched the Braves celebrate at Citizens Bank Park. We're like, all right, I could do it. I was fine without watching that Cardinals series. And I'm like, I'll come back around, you know, after this one. And
if you're the MLB, why not just stop the regular season in September and then just try to like compete with the NFL in terms of like playoffs and stuff in September? Like,
why not? Question.
Why not? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure if like, I think the biggest buzz for the NFL is certainly like right in the first 2 weeks and then like, you know, the playoffs, right? I mean, do you feel like there's a dip in the NFL when it gets to like week three or week four? So if MLB could find that soft spot where you kind of like end in your regular season, then your playoffs start maybe
like more middle of the season, like middle, like week seven, week eight, you're still like, okay, who's for real? Who's not for real? You gotta remember like the Vikings and stuff. Like we never believed in them as a two seed last year and everything, but people were still figuring them out. I remember they had that game against, this still pisses me off to this day. They had that game against the Bills where they were just gifted that win. And then the NFL comes out with the power rankings, or ESPN comes out the power rankings. They're above the undefeated Eagles after the Eagles torched them on Monday Night Football and everything. So you're still figuring these teams out and everything. I'm trying to think of a team that might have not been as good as we, or was better in the late in the season than we thought they were. The Giants, the New York Giants, I think a lot of people were like, you know, who are they? Who are they? Then by the end of the year, they're like, okay, yeah. And a lot of people actually picked them to beat the Vikings in the playoffs. I think people are very shocked about how they started off this season. It's basically the same exact team. And obviously Daboll overperformed last year.
Yeah. I have a statistic that shows how effective the Eagles were running the ball the other night. I have this new column that I'm going to do every week. It's just a weekly stat roundup. It's nothing crazy, just like go one layer below the surface and try to pick some interesting stuff that we can extrapolate and like find some patterns or whatever. How effective was DeAndre Swift's Thursday night performance? He's now third in the NFL with 178 rushing yards despite only getting one carry in New England. There are four running backs this season with at least 15 carries and a yards per rush number greater than six. They are DeAndre Swift, Christian McCaffrey, Bijan Robinson, and Austin Eckler.
Good company.
Yeah. Yeah, it is good company. But again, I mean, going back to that point with me asking about the exercise, like I think that is it ridiculous to say that a team that has Devontae Smith and AJ Brown needs to be a running team first? or that's like what you do has to be predicated on that. And then what I say is I split it out into two different things, because I say running the ball is one thing. Running the ball with Jalen versus running the ball with your running backs is a separate kind of thing, you know, because it's really like a whatever headed monster it is with the running backs, add another head for Jalen. Right.
I think we're cutting off Rashad Penny's head. I think I'm about to cut off Rashad Penny's head. Okay.
All right.
I don't think he gets through the season.
That was strange. Yeah. I mean, because he came in finally. I mean, the only reason he got on the field is because two other guys were injured, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, then he had that penalty on the AJ Brown thing, you know? And, but it's interesting because it's like they, you know, through the entirety of last year, they had two guys who were top five in the NFL in red zone rushing attempts. I mean, it's just ridiculous, you know, first versus to have that many that you even can get two guys into the top five, let alone rank them in the top five. I think Miles Sanders had 45 red zone rushing attempts. I think Jalen Hurts had 44. Now, how many of those are tush pushes, right? I mean, how many of those are QB sneaks? It's dependent. It's like why DeAndre Swift was joking after the game where he was like, yeah, I was hoping, what did he say? Something about like, if the ball's on the one, I know I'm not getting it because they're just going to tush push and rugby scrum into the end zone anyway.
Fantasy football owners were going nuts on Thursday for DeAndre Swift.
So it's that. So that's one part of it. But then the other half of it is like, okay, well, how much, you know, because they had a lot of success like running Jalen out of like empty set or like RPO and whatnot or zone reads, right? And it's funny because because Minnesota and New England both did a really good job taking away the option plays and, you know, kind of just hammering home those reads and making sure Hurts wasn't going to get anywhere on those. By the way, the Philly media still does not understand the difference between an RPO and a zone read. I feel like we talk about this every year, but not every time you pull the ball, every time you pull the ball and read somebody, there's not always a passing component.
Tell me, I don't know the difference. Can you explain to the people real quick what the difference is?
Yeah, well, there was a play in the second quarter or something the other night. It was like a third down. It was like a second down or a third down or whatever. And Jalen Hurts was reading a defensive end or something, pulled the ball, decided to run it himself, and people kept calling it an RPO. But there's no passing option on the play. Like, the linemen are already 1 yard down the field, so they're run blocking. So it's either DeAndre Swift runs it or he runs it. You know, RPO, if he can read it, if the defensive end crashes, he can pull it and throw. But not everything that's like an option play where you're reading an end or a linebacker or something and then decide to hand it off or pull. There's not always a passing component on the back end of it, you know.
Got it. So if you're watching on TV, you should be looking at the offensive line to figure out if it's an RPO or a zone read, or you should be looking at the wide receivers, or
you can look at both. I mean, because they can't downfield block any more than a yard, or else they get flagged for illegal man downfield, right? But you can also watch the wide receivers to see if they even run any real routes or something. Sometimes they just take like two or three steps and just then look over at the other side of the field, you know? So it's not, I thought we learned all this with when Chip Kelly was, came in, you know, 10 years ago, but I guess not, you know.
So, I'm not a tape dog, so, you know. No,
I'm not either, but I tried to watch some of it just to see what they were doing in the passing game to Jalen, and they were just dropping eight and they were, you know, rushing their three and whatever. How about I introduce today's guest? Can I introduce today's guest?
I would love for you to. You know, I know you guys have a history.
Somebody who knows a lot about playing defensive back because he was a defensive back in the NFL. And somebody who I'm proud to say was a former coworker. It's Beasley Reese, former CBS3 sports director. How you doing, Beez?
I'm doing great. Good to see you guys. Thanks for having me on. And I'm excited about the NFL season. I'm excited about the Eagles and just a bunch of wonderful stuff on TV on Sunday, Monday, and Thursday.
Now, wait, hang on a sec. I need you to turn around there because I thought I saw long hair coming out the back there. Did you grow your hair out?
Yeah, I haven't had a haircut since I got
dang.
Since I got hired at CBS3 and, you know, just loving retirement, boys.
I love it.
Dude, Beach, you look like the Predator, man, from Alien versus Predator. I love that.
I've been in corporate America for like 40 years.
Yeah.
And so I had a beard a couple of weeks ago.
But they didn't let you grow. Because when you were on, you had the mustache, right? But you weren't even allowed to grow this.
No,
right?
No, we weren't. It's different today. The guys have more freedom of expression. But when I was with CBS3.
Oh, no. Did we lose him?
I think we still got the audio. Then,
mom tried to call me.
Sorry.
Oh, there he goes. Yeah, yeah.
But when I was active with those folks, it was a lot more conservative, all of it.
Yeah, I remember when
CBS 3 runs like the New York Yankees over there. No, no beard, just mustache allowed.
Yeah,
I lost your audio for just a second there.
No, he was saying, "Bees, you couldn't." You know, it's like the New York Yankees. You can't grow out the facial hair when you work in television. You know,
that's right. That's right. The Yankees were like that forever.
Yeah, I remember when Chris May came back from vacation one time. He had like the scruffiest beard ever. It was probably the first time he didn't shave every single day in God knows how long or whatever. So what are you up to, man? You moved back down to Texas after television and you retired down there?
Yeah, I'm living on the farm that I was born and raised on. So I'm, working the land, growing hay, and. But I did serious work when I left CBS 3. I had about a year of quiet, and then I became the CEO of the NFL Alumni Association, and I ran that since 2018. And just very busy, a lot of stress, a lot of problems that I had to deal with. I had they asked me to do it for 3 months as an interim, and 4 years later, a little over 4 years later, I retired. So that was a very interesting because I spent my entire life in sports. 9 years as a player, 35 or so years as a broadcaster in several places. My best job and best town was Philadelphia, and love it. Just got back. We had meetings, and the alumni executive board had meetings in Philadelphia last week. So I just got back. I got my hit of all of my Philadelphia favorites, and my God, it was wonderful.
What are some of your
back
favorites?
Home now.
What are some of your favorites when you come to Philadelphia?
Kyle, for some reason, I'm not hearing you. I don't know what's going on.
Oh, man. That's appropriate. I'll just ask you the questions for him. He was asking what some of your favorites were. What do you do when you come back to Philadelphia?
Well, I get a, I eat. And so, I hit my favorite restaurants. I had breakfast at a park and walked Rittenhouse Square, walked the square for about 30 minutes before my friends met up with me for breakfast and had breakfast. And then we all walked Rittenhouse, just like a little workout, did a little stretching, little walking, got cheesesteak at a couple of places. And, but the meetings were busy, so I wasn't free to just run the streets like I normally am. But I've made sure I got my favorite sites in.
Yeah. Well, that like retirement or semi-retirement is supposed to be stress-free, right? You're supposed to be removing stressors, not adding them back in. I mean, what we went through at Channel 3 for many years. You're trying to be going the opposite way, not adding more stress to your life,
Oh, my God. I can't believe I let that happen. But like I said, I was on the executive board of the Alumni Association for many years. I was the president of the Philadelphia chapter of the NFL Alumni. We did some wonderful things, raised a lot of money for children's charities in the Philadelphia area. And that's one of the things that I'm really proud of. When they choose a CEO, they look to see who's had the best chapter. And, Philadelphia was always number one or number two. We would lose to Detroit because a former player died and left six figures to the chapter. So they always came in number one.
Yeah.
But trust me, my hard work and the cheerleaders, a bunch of Eagles cheerleaders were on my staff, and we had Philly up in number one, two, or three in charity money raised, and more importantly, because Detroit just kept their money in the bank, so they'd win. But Philly spent the money. We gave the money to children's charities. My favorite one, and when my cheerleaders brought it to me, I was like, what? But you know how you got to act around cheerleaders sometimes. You got to like, oh, okay, that's a great idea. And so I went along with it. And it was Work to Ride. And it was that group in Philly that trains kids how to, you know, they clean the horses and the barns and all. And then they get to learn how to play polo.
Yeah.
And then, so we gave them $10,000 a year for a couple of years in a row. And I'm just doing it because the cheerleaders, they work harder than anybody. And so I let them tell us to do that. Those kids won the national championship in polo against kids in the world. And I'm yelling because every time I say it, I start crying. I'm so proud of the work that group does, number one, and of the work that we did, you know, during a couple of tough times for them. It was your Philadelphia chapter that gave them the money that kept those kids, you know.
Yeah. Doing it's funny because you don't think of
college. They all have high GPA. You know, I mean, it's just amazing what working with animals and the responsibility of the cleaning and the feeding can do for a child.
Yeah, it's funny because you wouldn't think of Philadelphia as being like a hotbed for polo. You know, my first television station that I worked at before I came up to Channel 3 was in Augusta, Georgia. So like Aiken, South Carolina was like the you know, ground zero for all that. I used to see people over there all the time. But no, it's a great story. I'm glad you guys were. I know you guys were really involved with that for a long time. You know, so let me ask you, when you're watching games now, I mean, you were broadcasting up here for a while, but you played for the Giants and you're from Texas. I mean, what do you watch? What do you focus on? Do you watch all the Eagles games or what?
I have four teams. I was drafted by and played my rookie year for the Dallas Cowboys. Please don't start cursing. And then I went to the Giants for 6 years, and then for 2 years I went to Tampa Bay. So those are my three teams. And then I worked in Philadelphia for 19 years.
Yeah.
I was the host of the Andy Reid show. I was the host of the Donovan McNabb show, the Troy show, all because the station had the rights to, you know, they were the partner, television partner for many years while I was there with the Eagles. So I got to do all these incredible things, hosting these incredible programs, and so those are my four teams.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Those are the teams that I watch. Those are the teams that I cheer for. And when the Giants are playing the Eagles or the Cowboys are playing the Eagles, I'm not involved. I just watch it, and whoever wins, I'm happy.
Try to enjoy it. Yeah. So what do you make of the Eagles so far this year?
I think there's kind of a they're 2-0, but I don't like the way they've played, and I don't like the way they look. I mean, they've got great things. They've got a great defense, great defensive line. If you have a great defensive line and a great offensive line, it's hard to get beat in the NFL. So because you know, those are the stars. People who really know football know that the star is not necessarily the quarterback, the wide receiver, and the running back. Those aren't the only stars out there. The stars are the guys that make a superstar running back look good. That's the offensive line. You know, it's the defensive line that creates an incredible defensive back. The linemen are the stars of the NFL, and that's the way it is in the locker room. In the locker room, the players know that they can't do anything without the offensive linemen. So just know that Kelce is the superstar out there, and Johnson. Those are the superstars that make everything happen. But I think Jalen is my favorite quarterback. I'll watch him. You know, even if I'm not watching football, if the Eagles are on, I'll watch, because a player has to make me watch at my where I am in the game. I played in over 100 games. I called over 100 games for NBC and CBS all over the world. Working at CBS 3, I was at the stadium every Sunday morning to do our Sunday morning kickoff show. Mm-hmm. And so, trust me, I've had enough game. I don't want the stress of trying to get there on time for kickoff or for a pregame show. I would love to just sit at home and watch on the couch.
Yes.
But that was such an incredible time in my life that I feel blessed that I got to do it. But, you know, in a long answer to your question, I follow all four of those teams. And the Eagles, yeah, they're 2-0, but they don't look – they're not where they should be. I think the quarterback needs to run the ball more. He's a power runner. And I know, as a former defensive player, how stressful that makes your job when the quarterback runs. Oh, my God. It changes the way you defend everybody. So, hey, look. They've got a great running back, but you know, I don't know if he's great or not, because the offensive line is so good. They've got an awesome offensive line, so this kid is benefiting from them having the best offensive line in the world. DeAndre Smith is just, you know, he is so blessed. Hopefully he's not walking around patting his own chest. He needs to be thanking those big boys up front, because he is a talented kid. Now, he's another. If he does this again, he's going to join Jalen Hurts with me as a reason that I sit down and watch a football game, because that kid is fast as lightning.
Beast, can you hear me now?
Oh, no, he can't hear you at all. That's crazy. You're going to have to ask the questions to me, Kyle, and then I'm going to have to convey them to him. We'll just pass it along down the road here.
Yeah. So, Kev, what I want to know is who's Beasley's best team in the NFC East right now? What do you say?
Okay, Kyle wants to know who's the best team in the NFC East right now.
Well, they're all good. That's what's, pretty shocking. If you look at the NFC East, Cowboys, Eagles, the Commanders, undefeated. The Giants are 1-1. So if you look across the standings, the NFC East is the strongest. That's the only conference with divisions with three undefeated teams. I know it's early in the season, But the facts are the facts. I think the strongest team, and maybe the strongest team in the National Football League, is the Dallas Cowboys right now. I mean, I know we don't want to hear that, those of us that love Philadelphia sports, but right now, if you stopped everything right now, I'd have to put the Cowboys as the number one team. I would put the 49ers.
San Fran look good.
Yeah. As number two team.
Yeah.
They've got the best running back, Christian McCaffrey.
Well, that's who we had as our top three, Bees. We had Dallas, San Fran, and Philadelphia like coming into the season in the NFC.
Okay. Well, yeah. I love that call. And then after I would put, let me see. Then I would go Kansas City, and Kansas City is looking weird. I don't know what's going on with them, but they're looking weird. They're 1-1, I believe.
Super Bowl hangover, maybe. I mean, the Eagles were there too.
Maybe that's it. And yeah. that certainly does happen. And then I like the Ravens. I like the Ravens, and I like Miami. But now the Cowboys are weird because, look, Dak Prescott has been in the NFL for 8 years, and he really hasn't done much.
Well, that's why people are skeptical. I mean, you know, because it's the same old thing. It's like the Cowboys are going to look good in the regular season.
Right.
And then they're going to get there, and they're going to, you know, find a way to.
So, now, right now, Dak looks awesome. I'm telling you right now, he looks like the best quarterback in the NFL. This guy is really making smart decisions and making pinpoint key throws. But 8 years is a long test tube.
Yeah.
We know who you are after 8 years in the league. So I don't think
that what people are saying. I mean, you're in Waco, right? I mean, so you're like half, it's probably mostly Cowboys fans there. Yeah.
Cowboys fans.
Yeah. I mean, what do people down there, do they believe in the Cowboys, or are they like skeptical?
No, they're skeptical. They're skeptical because they know, you know, they don't trust Dak.
Yeah.
You know, in Philadelphia, I believe we're to the point where we trust Hurts.
Yeah.
He has 100% trust.
Yeah.
That way in the beginning, but, you know, he earned it. Boy, did he earn it.
So, you know, it's funny. It's funny, Bees. I got to tell you, like, I think that the Dallas hate in Philadelphia has kind of subsided a little bit. Because I'm like 38, right? So I remember Troy Aikman and Emmitt Smith and all that stuff, but they really haven't done jack shit since then, really. You know, so like you have an entire generation of kids who grew up like knowing that they weren't, you know, they watched the Giants win a couple Super Bowls.
That is a great point. That is,
yeah, true. Yeah. It's interesting. Excuse my crassness too, by the way, with all that.
But yeah, it happens.
You want to pass a question on?
Yeah, I'd like to pass the telephone down the line. SB's, if he was accepted in Philly to start, you know, being a former Cowboy and Giant, did he have to like earn everybody's respect and trust and everything coming from the bad side?
I feel like I'm the translator with like MMA or something. Like he's speaking Portuguese to me and then I'm speaking English or something, you know, like,
right.
Or like I'm translating for like the Russian guys from the mountains or whatever. But, he said when you came to Philly, I mean, you played for two division rivals. I mean, was anybody skeptical of Beasley Reese, like a Giant and a Cowboy, like having to do an Eagle stuff?
Oh my God. Well, yeah. First of all, it showed me that, you know, I thought I was a star with the Giants. Well, if you come to Philadelphia and nobody gets mad at a Dallas Cowboy and a New York Giant taking a major job in town, you know that really my football career wasn't much. Nobody even knew. Most people, a lot of people in Philly think I played for the Eagles at some point because I had a job for so. Yeah, see, there you go. Kyle thought a former Bird because of how long I was there. But this is again, and when people say something about Philadelphia, make a comment, I get right on them. I get right on their ass because if you bust your butt, if you work hard and you volunteer in the community and you become a part of the city, you are loved and respected in Philadelphia.
It's
like
no hard. Yeah.
In the world. And I've lived in a lot of major cities, and I'm telling you that in Philadelphia, if you get up, you show up to work on time, you bust your butt, you pay attention, and you try real hard, and you be respectful of the city and its history, Philadelphia will love you. And it took me 2 or 3 years, but I feel like I was loved and appreciated and welcomed into Philly, even by the people that knew enough about, you know, my little old career.
It's funny that we hold the broadcasters to the same standard as like the superstar athletes, right? Like we treated Beasley Reese the same exact way as Ben Simmons and Markelle Fultz and Carson Wentz and all these people, right? Like he had to come in and earn it just like everybody else, you know. But you're right. I mean, it's simple. It's not complicated. One of my favorite things that we did, Beasley, was when we did the when we did Sports Zone on Sundays. He'll pop back up here in 2 seconds. There he is. Yep. When we did Sports Zone on Sundays, we had the video board and we did the Telestrator. Remember that? Yeah. Like, and that was a lot of fun because we could get into like, you know, some X's and O's kind of stuff and go like one level below the surface and show some people some stuff. On that note, I'm interested in seeing what you think, because when I was watching the Vikings and the Eagles the other night, on a number of possessions, they just rushed three guys and they dropped eight into coverage. And they let Jalen Hurts try to read the coverage, and he didn't do too well against it. And it's just funny. I'm laughing because like my college team has played some version of like a 3-3-5 forever. You're in Big 12 country now, right? I mean, like it's three man rush. It's drop eight into zone. Yeah. What did you see from that? And like, what do you think? What's the next step for a quarterback? I mean, is that Jalen Hurts thing that he's got to figure out? Just continue to get better in reading defenses and seeing what's out there?
Well, I think it's a sign of his and the coaching staff's intelligence in that they didn't fight that. They ran the ball. The kid had a heck of a running day. Swift did. And Jalen didn't try to take him over the top because they had so many people dropping back deep. I was surprised that he didn't run a few more times when you're only rushing three people and you're dropping that many back. Basically, the defense is saying, beat us running.
Yeah. And so they shifted to that. Yeah.
Yeah. And they shifted to that. And that shows how that shows a level of balance that the Eagles offense has. And I think it plays into their hands. If I was teams on the schedule, I wouldn't try that strategy because the offensive line is so good that if you do that, you're going to have the time of possession is going to be – you'll never have the ball.
It's like 40 minutes the other night.
Exactly.
Yeah. It was like 40-20 or something like that.
Number, I just know the strategy, if you do that, against a team with a great offensive line, they're going to run the ball. They're going to keep the ball. Your team is never going to win the time of possession battle, and people don't realize how important that is. And so the Eagles won the time of possession. They ran the ball extremely well, and they took the few opportunities past that they were given.
Did they, you know, it's interesting in the modern day NFL because it's much more of a zone coverage league and two safeties and you don't want to get beat over the top, right? I mean, they talk about explosive plays and all that. Did you guys talk about that back in the day or how much of the focus back then on saying, hey, we're going to keep, how much of the focus was like, hey, we're going to keep everything in front of us and like limiting stuff over the top?
There was mostly... And that was created by people like Bullet Bob Hayes. You know, he kind of forced the invention of the zone. He was the fastest man in the world and a wide receiver for the Cowboys. And then there were other guys like Willie Gault. There were Olympic. There was a time when they go get Olympians and teach them how to play wide receiver and just run them through the zone and see if they could catch a couple of deep throws just based on unreal foot speed. So but the game adjusts. You know, that was the invention and the perfection of the zone, those names that I just gave you. Now today, you don't have enough guys that scare people with just that blind speed. Today, everybody's fast. The corners are as fast as some of these wide receivers. So if you see man for man, they'll have two safeties over the top. Everybody across the bottom will play man for man. and which is a, I think that's the safest defense in the world, is a cover two man, cover two. So you see that a lot. The Commanders through their history kind of perfected that, and but most people hear about Tampa Bay running a two deep zone with man and zone underneath. So the game is cyclical, and here's how they choose it. They choose it by personnel. So if you're going to play deep zone and rush three people, that means that they respect the passing ability of the quarterback. They respect the wide receivers. You know, they're worried about A.J. Brown. You know, they're worried about something in order to do that. And so they play that and try to keep it close, which they did. The score was close, and they had an opportunity. But the Eagles have won two close games.
Yeah, it's just funny to me because, like, I know you played with Lawrence Taylor back in the day, and the Philly fans loved Buddy Ryan and Reggie White and Seth Joyner and all these guys. Kyle and I talked about it, I feel like, every other podcast last year, where it's like, because people were complaining about the Eagles' defense this year. It's like, it's too soft. You know, they want them to get after the quarterback. I'm like, I get it. I understand. But, like, the 46 defense is not coming back, at least not right now. You know, so it's just a different – you know, the offense does one thing, defense adjusts, and the offense adjusts to the adjustment. And you know, you use the word, right? It's cyclical, like around and around we go. And I just, you know, but the fans liked when, you know, the linebacker was crashing through the line and trying to flatten somebody after every play. You know, it's just a little, it's the aesthetics of it, I think, sometimes are challenging. I mean, for me, it's not a big deal because I watched so much college football. I was used to seeing all of that, you know, all that bullshit, big 12, like zone, every play is like drop eight guys, you know? So yeah. I don't know if it necessarily, you know, registered with like the Buddy Ryan fan here in Philadelphia, but you know, it's just how it goes, you know. Kyle, is there anything else I can pass on here? Can I translate anything else?
I mean, he was a part of the Miracle at the Meadowlands one. So I really want to know what his thought process on that, how the locker room was after that.
Okay.
For some reason I heard him.
Okay, good.
Oh, that all was right. My favorite question, too. Good.
Back. Well, there's I don't believe anybody ever told this story. I don't believe this ever came out. You guys tell me, maybe it did. So, you know, younger people may not know, but the Giants were winning an important game, and we hadn't had a good record in a long time. We were actually had a winning record. And if we won that game, I think we would have been like 5-2 or 5-3. It was a big moment in our little season. And so we were winning the game, and they had Larry Zonka in the backfield, who was a great Hall of Fame running back for the young kids out there. And Joe Pisarcik was the quarterback, and the coach called a running play with only a few seconds left in the game. And so Larry Zonka, a veteran, he was a part of the undefeated team with the Miami Dolphins. He was an old player. He said, "Are you crazy? Don't call that play. Just take a knee, Joe. Joe, take a knee." Joe was a new starter and was arguing with him, saying, "No, man, he called the play. If I don't run the play that he calls, all hell's gonna." So they're arguing as they go up to the center. They snap the ball, and Joe kind of half kneels and half hands off. He's gonna see what Zonka does. Zonka kind of half runs the play, but half expects, and the fumble happened. Coach Herman Edwards picked up the ball and ran it in for a touchdown. That was the miracle at the Meadowlands. And here's the part that people don't know. We went into the locker room, and literally the defensive linemen started beating up members of the offense. Nobody knows this. I'm telling you, it was a fist fight. Like, I think I was probably the only one that wasn't fighting, because I was either scared or
there's some big guys there.
Dude, there's some stuff that went down in that locker room, inside the locker room. The head coach, the offensive coordinator got fired. I believe the head coach might have gotten fired at the end of the year. I'm just telling you, it was an upheaval. Like, so when you say miracle at the Meadowlands, there's about 60 guys that I know that go, oh my God.
I've never heard that before. Have you heard that, Kyle?
No, and LT wasn't on the team at that point. Could you imagine if he was on that team? Oh my God.
Oh my God. If LT had been on that team, he would have started beating guys up before we went in the locker room.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of – that just unfortunately – well, not unfortunately for us, but that derailed your guys' season. I was reading about it. There was a plane that flew over the Meadowlands of fire the coach or fire the team or sell the team. They were lighting tickets on fire and everything a couple games later after they lost to the Cardinals. Yeah, it was – supposedly there was a couple brawls out in out where the tailgaters were too, and I think the Eagles team bus got like crushed with whatever the fans threw at it or anything. Like it was a wild scene. Apparently,
it was horrible. It went from our most promising season to just absolute disaster. But it is a classic moment in sports.
I'm glad you shared that with us. It's funny because those stories like. You know, now you've got cameras everywhere in the locker room, and now every player has their own podcast, or they've got their own Twitter account, or they've got their own Instagram or something. It's like you have more access to these guys than you ever had before, you know? Yet stories like that, we don't, you know, there that wouldn't have been possible back then, you know?
Yes. Yeah. That's right.
Could you imagine that? We always get like Nick Sirianni's speech after the games they win and everything. Could you imagine what that would have been like, the locker room after that, with like, you know, the NFL media follows everybody around and everything? Oh my God, I couldn't imagine.
You have to tell Hard Knocks to take a break. Like, all right, we're not filming this one, you know.
Everybody out.
Yeah, just give us 10 minutes. Yeah. PZ, just one more for you, and thanks for the time, man. Is there anything you miss from doing television up here? I really liked doing the high school football stuff that we did on Friday nights.
Oh, man.
You
mentioned the two things that I love the most.
Yeah.
Being able to draw stuff and talk X's and O's and with the energy that we all had, you know.
My favorite thing would be BZ would sit. So real quick, we would go out and, you know, we'd all go out and we'd collect all the video and we'd come back. Right. And then this guy, Andy, we had Andy on the show. Actually, Andy Wheeler was on this show. We brought up a map showing everybody about how far he would make me friggin' drive every Friday. You know, he'd make me drive from like Quakertown to like Silesianum or something, you know. but we would combine all of it, you know, and we'd sit there and we'd look at like the, you know, you got like a 5-minute reel or whatever. So we'd call Beasley in and all the producers, the three of us would sit there and we'd watch the reel of like everything we had cobbled. Cause Beasley's got to watch it a couple times to, you know, get a feel for like what was there, whatever. But
yeah,
we laughed so hard during like those like initial run throughs of it. Cause we were just like trying to figure it out. And we were like joking and we were like cursing and we were like, look at this play. And I don't know. It's just something about all that was just very like, I remember there's this one guy who played for Neshaminy and his name was Charles Snorway. I don't know why I remember this, but Beasley would try to come up with like clever stuff to do with these guys' last names. So Beasley just starts snoring. And you're like, don't sleep on Snorway. Charles Snorway. It's going into the end zone.
That's pretty good, Beast. I like that.
Oh, man. Well, listen, I mean, yeah, literally, hopefully people can't see it, but you are bringing tears to my eyes. So much fun. You know, just everybody worked so hard. Kevin, you were so creative and just the things that you brought to the table, man. I love you for that. Your energy was so strong and you worked so hard to make that special. And the Friday nights, you know, I my favorite one, and people walk up to me in Philly all the time, and they say, "Get him!" You know? And my wife, watching my two sons play, you could hear her all over the stadium screaming, "Get him!" when an opposing player broke loose. So we made that part of the show. And if a guy on play, I would say, "Somebody better get him!"
I know, it was worth it. It was worth it too, because I would sit in the news van for like 2 hours, and I think I'd only be on the sidelines for like 10 minutes total or whatever. For you know, because there were games where I would walk in and I'd turn the camera on and there'd be a touchdown, and then I'd walk right back out and be like, "Well, I got what I needed to." But it was great. It was nice. It was cool to be able to see, like, you know, like do that like hyper local stuff. You know what I mean? It's like, well, here comes Eyewitness News or whatever. You know, better than sitting in front of the computer and doing like another. It's just nice to be out in the field and do that stuff. And you did your games where you went out there and you would do like the live hits for like 6 o'clock or something.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of fun though.
What was what kind of teammate, what kind of employee was Kevin like? Was he more like a Phil Sims? Was he more like a Larry Zonka? Maybe a Billy Taylor? Like anybody that you played with that you can compare him to?
Well, listen, I was just surrounded by creative people. You know, Kevin got the shot, and he can. You know, we all wrote together. You know, he would come up with something fun that he wanted me to say, or I'd see a video that he shot and make something funny out of it. I mean, we just had such a great group. Andy Wheeler, and I'll never forget it, and I will never be able to thank you guys for what you all accomplished and what we accomplished together. We had the best Friday night football show by far. We had the best Sunday kickoff shows. You know, we had a heck of a group and a hell of a run. And thank you, Kevin. Thank you, buddy.
Oh, thank you, man. Thanks for the time. That was great. I just, you know, I was sitting here thinking, I'm like, you know, let's think of who we can get on their football season. I'm like, I should call Beasley. I haven't talked to Beasley in like 8 years. We got to get him on. You know, like, why haven't I called him yet? So, it's good to see you, man. Thanks for the time. And enjoy your time down there. Remember, you're trying to remove stressors, not add stressors.
Yeah. I'm there now.
I'm
retired for real. And I'll hang up now and go play some golf.
What a life. Enjoy, Beast.
All right. See y'all. Peace.
See man. Y'all.
Say bye.
Oh, man.
Best.
That was great.
Beast.
You want to do a couple minutes of college football?
Sure.
Yeah, might as well. Big win from the Mountaineers. Extend Neil Brown.
No, I hope not. Yeah. It's funny, man, because I watched it. Like, first of all, it's nice to, like, everybody I think remembers that Pitt West Virginia game, like, opened the college football.
That was awesome.
Last year. Yeah. And I mean, like, my takeaway from that was like, shit, this game should be played every year, you know? And I think, 100%. Like, yeah, I think that's the, you know, I think that's what probably most people were saying. It's like, these are like classic rivals. They're 70 miles apart. They should always be playing. But man, that Pitt quarterback was shit. Were you actually like watching any of that game?
I was watching more Colorado State, Colorado, but it was on TV, so I was just kind of peeking at the score and everything. But yeah, the bar was locked in on Colorado State, and the fact that that dude threw a cheap shot on Travis Hunter, and now Travis Hunter's out for 3 weeks, it kind of like muddies this like whole Colorado team. I love Shador Sanders, but man, it was so fun watching Travis Hunter on both sides of the ball and everything. That obviously puts a death knell on his Heisman campaign.
Who would have known that we'd all be locked into Colorado and Colorado State? And
I mean, dude, there's like they're having like a concert by Key Glock in the locker room after the game. Like he's a pretty big rapper right now. Like he's just doing a concert right now. Mrs. Sanders is coming up talking shit to people and everything. Master P,
Kawhi Leonard, on the
side. Yeah. Offset and Master Pierre playing ping pong in the locker room and everything. It's insane. The A-listers. It's like it's like the Messi of college football. Like Dion, really. Like the amount of A-listers that are just coming down to Boulder or going to be there. You know, I forget if they play USC at home or not. But I mean, can you imagine all the people that are going to be on the sidelines if it's in, you know, Pasadena? I mean, it's going to be insane. I will tell you what. If I'm a If I'm a Penn State fan, I'd be a little worried about Drew Aller. Drew Aller didn't look that good. They was looking so bad. They needed a running back to throw a touchdown pass in that Illinois game. They never really pulled away.
Yeah, I mean, the defense had like four takeaways.
You saying the Pitt quarterback was bad? That Illinois quarterback was terrible.
I don't feel as bad about our performance in Happy Valley now after watching that game, after watching Illinois the other night. But I don't know. It's just like that Colorado State thing just had everything, man. I mean, the coaches, the other coach talking shit about Dion before the game, and the College Game Day being there, just again the game going to overtime. Like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, they've been involved in like two absolute bangers.
Yeah.
They could be game of the season. Colorado's played in two of the, candidates for game of the season already.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Just back to Pitt and West Virginia real quick. I think like both those programs are so far behind where they should be. I mean, my first backyard brawl that I ever watched, Larry Fitzgerald was on the field. And Chris Henry and Pac-Man Jones, like these guys who were legitimate NFL players, man, who got drafted and played in the league. And like, I'm like, who the hell are these dudes playing in this game? Now, our starting quarterback went down on the second series, mm-hmm. and Pitt's quarterback went on to throw three interceptions as they just ran the ball over and over and over again. I mean, if I had told you before the game that our starting quarterback was going to go down and we'd win by multiple scores anyway, like, yeah, Pitt. That's why I'm not super excited about it, because I think it was less about us being amazing and more of just Pitt just being like total dog shit, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they got to fire that coach. Who is it, Narduzzi still?
Narduzzi, yeah.
He's a horse's ass. Man, I'm looking at the top 25 right now. Georgia, Michigan, Texas, Florida State, USC, Ohio State, Penn State. It's like the 90s college football all over again right now. Like the Blue Bloods are like all the way at the top, and then you have your Bamas that you're like, where do they go from here? I mean, they barely beat powerhouse AAC team USF over the weekend, and they needed three quarterbacks to do it. I mean, they benched the first two string quarterbacks, had the third guy in right now. It's weird. Nick Saban isn't your
it's good for college football though. It's good. Really good. That's why I was pulling for South Carolina to hold on to the lead and keep the upset, just because you just want to see some different teams up there. It's been a lot of Georgia and Bama and whatever. It looks like Clemson's on a downturn, so they won't be up there. But nice to see Florida State good again. I wouldn't mind seeing Penn State up in there. I don't know, just new blood, man. Just different teams, and then change of pace, Do your boys got a chance against Miami coming up here?
I don't think they do. Yeah. Miami's playing pretty well. Yeah. Do they cover? Yeah, it's at home. I think the stadium will be rocking as much as the Link can be rocking for Temple football. Yeah. But we kind of had the highlight of our season. It was the double cheek push down there at the Link. one thing though that's insane to me is we pay $2 million. Do you know we pay $2 million a game to play there?
Ridiculous.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That we can't get more than 5,000 people to come out there, and we pay $2 million a game. Yeah. And they can't paint the end zones for Temple.
I know. I don't know what's contractually mandated or what's not, but I mean, Temple's, there's got to be a better deal for Temple out there.
I mean, it's hilarious to watch Temple score a touchdown and it just says the Eagles word mark on there, faded because they didn't, redo it or anything, because it's still from Thursday Night Football. It's like,
yeah. I don't know. I don't know. Look, obviously, like the on-campus stadium was not the answer. It didn't get a lot of traction or whatever, but surely anything would be better than the Link, right? I mean, like,
yeah, they built the soccer stadium and the field hockey stadium on Broad and Girard. It would have been the perfect spot. It was the old William Penn High School. It would have been the perfect spot for a football stadium. It would have connected more of like, Center City to Temple, but
they can just, I mean, I don't see why they can't just convert that soccer stadium though. I mean, the turf's already down and everything, right? Can you put
brand new?
You don't got to do anything. You just got to put, 15,000 seats around it.
No, if they did that, Title IX would be up their fucking ass. Yeah. If they did that stuff, they already had had the opportunity to it. So it's like, the Temple's in a weird spot right now between the on-campus stuff, between the sports and everything. They, between presidents just leaving every 2 years and stuff. Temple is in a weird spot. They got to figure it out.
Yeah. A lot of transformative moments taking place up on North Broad these days. I had a crazy idea a couple years ago where I thought they should team up with the Union and build a stadium in like the River Wards. Like off of like Fishtown, Port Richmond, something like that. Temple could play there. The Union could play there.
I mean, because I mean, they share Subaru with like the rugby and whatnot. Villanova played down there a couple times. I don't know. Just was spitballing at the time. But I was like, what's if you can't build in North Philly, where's the closest place that has land? Well, I mean, you go out, off towards the river, you could build something over there.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. No, that would actually be, that would actually make some sense. It'd be easy to get in, easy to get out too. Anything else?
No, man. I think that's it.
All right. Worried about the Phillies? Pitching sucks.
Not really. Well, I mean, how hard are the Braves trying now? I mean, they, because they're, how far ahead are they? Of,
they got crushed this weekend by the Marlins. They got outscored 36-13.
But they're, how many games ahead of the Dodgers are they? Like five or something?
They're at least, yeah, I mean, they're 12 and a half at least of us. I mean, I haven't looked at the division race in probably about a month.
Yeah, let me see if I can pull it up here. The Braves are 96-53. And the Dodgers are 91-57. So I wonder if they're throttling down a gear at all, you know, after, you know, clinching. Probably not, knowing them. But
here's a little thing. Pat Narduzzi was okay with almost everything except expletive, I guess, the fucking police escort we had. Or shit police escort we had down here. It was embarrassing. I'm not happy with the fans throwing bottles at our kids. Felt like I was down in Morgantown, I guess. I don't know. Throwing stuff at our kids is a classless move. I'm sure. I'm surprised you didn't bitch about the eat shit pit chant that went pretty viral over the weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little uncouth, you know, a little boorish, but like you got, it's a primetime game, man. You got people drinking all day, you know? Like that's, you know, I don't condone that shit. I remember the very first game I went to, people were throwing bottles at Wisconsin fans. I was like, what the fuck is this? You know, yeah. Some stuff that's acceptable, some stuff that's not, you know? So,
and then here's a tweet from a Pittsburgh Panther, current football player, excuse me. The only thing I can say about last night is all the rumors about WVU fans are totally false. Plenty of Pitt and WVU fans hanging together. And I felt like a complete idiot not wearing my Pitt gear. Won't happen again and would definitely go back to Morgantown. I think it was a former player actually that said that.
Okay. Huh. Yeah, I mean, I still think sports fans in general have softened up a lot over the last 10, 15 years, you know. When Jesus Christ, we're giving Trey Turner standing ovation, you know.
So, yeah, I mean, I was down there for the Vikings game. I mean, I didn't really... And, you know, some people see Vikings gear and they, you know, immediately go red. But, you know, for there wasn't many Vikings fans, but the one that I saw, everybody was fine, you know, walking to the game and everything.
Did you guys
for that one fight where that guy with the big hat on got absolutely clocked. Did you see that video?
I don't think so.
You didn't see the Eagles fight video of the guy wearing those abnormally large hats?
No, man. Was I like asleep at the wheel or something?
It didn't come out until like Saturday when it first got really viral. I'll bring it up right here. The it's just a comical look of this guy in those really, really big hats.
Like the one that the guy was wearing in the Commander's locker room last year. It's like he's got a big hat company now. Okay.
And then the hat just goes flying off of him. Let me see. You see that?
I see it now. Oh.
Knock it off is my favorite part, too. People just shouting, knock it off, like people are going to stop brawling. Can you see this?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, no. Now I got to put it on the website and say, well, just a couple bad apples, you know?
Just, oh, my God. Just watch that hat fly.
Oh, no.
I mean, if you're the guy in the big hat, you can't fight. It just looks, it doesn't look good if you win. It doesn't look good if you lose. And especially when your hat's flying two rows back because someone just put a cross right over to your right, through your chin. I mean, hey, listen, Vikings fan and the Eagles fan coming together to kind of kick this guy's ass is heartwarming if you ask me.
I mean, you love to see it, you know?
Yeah.
Got to team up and do the right thing.
Yeah. I think the guy with the big hat, you know, I would say he's probably in the wrong here.
Well, I guess he won't be wearing that hat anymore.
I can't stop watching it. Yeah. Just that hat flying to the second row is hilarious.
I did appreciate the Cowboys Jets fan fight video where the guy, the t-shirt said, I'm a Jet bitch.
Yeah. Have you seen the headbutt one at the Bengals game?
I don't think so, no.
Oh, God, just headbutted the shit out of some dude. It was the cleanest headbutt in the world. The guy was cuffed and everything, getting carried away by the police.
And so he can only head. He can all he can do is headbutt. Okay.
Boom! Right in the bridge of the nose.
Man, yeah. That hurts just thinking about it. Jesus.
Football's back, baby.
Football's back. Yeah, we're back. Send all the bra video to kevin.k@xlmedia.com.
Oh man. All right. Hey,
if Crossing Broad ever fails, that's what we'll convert to. We'll just do fight video. We'll just do viral fight video.
Yeah. We'll just become the world star of
worldstartrash.com. Yeah.
All right. Hey, thanks for joining us today, everybody. We will talk to you on Wednesday. Birds, enjoy the rest.